Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Reign of Error ad-free. Find Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
In February 2012, the crappy New York Knicks were playing the only slightly crappier New Jersey Nets. Really, this was a game that was all about which team sucked less. This game should not have been memorable, like, at all. But late in the first quarter, the Knicks subbed in their backup point guard. This guy was so obscure, he didn't even get picked in the draft. At the time, he wasn't even sure how long he'd be in New York. I mean, he was sleeping on a teammate's couch. But what happened next was one of those sports moments so iconic, even people who don't follow basketball know about it. That obscure point guard was a Taiwanese-American Harvard graduate named Jeremy Lin. He got in the game. He absolutely tore it up.
Crossover, the basket, puts it in.
Lin knocked down jump shots from everywhere. That is, when he wasn't blowing by defenders and taking it to the hoop.
Reverse layup.
By the end of the game, this utter nobody had 25 points, 7 assists, 5 rebounds, and the crowd at Madison Square Garden, they were losing their collective mind, chanting Jeremy Lin's name.
To Chandler. Jeremy Lin flips it up again.
It was one of those impossible underdog stories, and it just kept going. Over the next 2 months, Lin racked up amazing game after amazing game. He even scored 38 points against Kobe Bryant. And Jeremy Lin, this couch-surfing Harvard grad, carried that formerly crappy Knicks team right into the playoffs. Lin's sanity became an international happening. I mean, even my friends at NPR were noticing this, and I'll tell you, that is saying a lot.
In the space of 10 days, the Asian-American Lin has gone from an unknown bench warmer to a high-scoring basketball phenom.
And then Jeremy Lin's contract expired. I mean, obviously, the Knicks were going to sign him in the offseason. I mean, this guy was a gift from the franchise gods, a Cinderella story, an overnight marketing sensation. People who didn't even care about basketball were buying Jeremy Lin jerseys. New York had to make him an offer, right? Wrong. They let him go. Jeremy Lin went on to sign with the Houston Rockets, and Lin's sanity ended as quickly as it began, crushing an entire fan base. And that is the part of this story that feels familiar to so many of us sports fans. The heartbreak, the helplessness. Our favorite players get traded, re-signed, it seems like every single day.
Griffey said when he was with the Mariners, the first thing he did in the morning was check how the Reds had done. Well, he won't need a paper anymore. He's a member of the Reds now, like he wanted.
Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green going north.
But it's all changed now. Granet is in Boston.
And Mookie Betts is the centerpiece, and he's going out west to L.A.
I went 86 years without a championship, so I guess, you know, we'll just have to deal with it again.
Occasionally, whole teams that generations of fans have adored get uprooted and carted away overnight. Because, you know, it is a business.
Under the mask of darkness, the moving van started pulling away from the Colts complex, and they were bound for Indianapolis.
The Browns are indeed coming to Baltimore.
And the big news is Rams to Englewood, money rules.
Some fans are left devastated, and others suddenly have a brand new team to get behind and maybe even indoctrinate their kids to root for. It's kind of like we're all pawns in a giant game of big business sports chess. But who's moving all those pieces? Who is doing this to us? The answer? Billionaires. And that's what this series is about. The mysterious club of billionaires who control our favorite teams and, for better or worse, our collective psyche. There are plenty of good owners in professional sports and plenty more bad ones. But most of them probably live in the gray area in between. They want to win as much as we do, but turns out running a team just isn't as easy as it seems to us sitting on the couch. In order to get a better view, we want to pan the cameras away from the players and up to those luxury boxes. And we're going to start back in Madison Square Garden with the very guy who failed to sign Jeremy Lin. The guy who looked that incredible gift horse in the mouth and said, nah, he's not worth it. I'm talking about James Dolan, the lightning rod in a fedora who owns the New York Knicks. An owner so colorful, we're going to need 5 episodes to unpack this train wreck of a story. Lin sanity aside, Dolan has made a career's worth of unpopular decisions, and not just of the contractual variety. Most recently, he started using facial recognition technology to keep his enemies out of his venues, like Madison Square Garden and Radio City Music Hall. Some of these enemies aren't very intimidating.
Kelly Conlon's daughter is a Girl Scout. This is a photo of security guards approaching her inside the lobby.
I was excited, and my daughter was excited to go and see the Radio City Christmas Spectacular and see the Rockettes.
The league has to step in and stop this. This is petty.
Yes.
It's mean. It's awful. You cannot allow this technology to fall in the hands of a vindictive person.
For using dystopian technology to punish fans, and for many, many, many other reasons, people in New York have strong opinions about James Dolan.
This is the equivalent of being kidnapped, stored in a basement, being tortured, and then they let you out when you're of no use to anybody.
Fire yourselves from being a Knicks fan.
Are you embarrassed by this, Isaiah?
We're all embarrassed.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the worst owner in the NBA, Jim Dolan.
And that is not hyperbole. In the 21st century, the New York Knicks have been the worst team in basketball. I mean, don't be fooled by this year's little playoff run. Even the lowly Charlotte Hornets have been better, which is funny. I mean, unless you're a Knicks fan. James Dolan's reign as Knicks boss has been nothing short of a disaster. And over the next 5 episodes, we will get into how he inherited this much-beloved New York institution and turn them into a laughingstock. Along the way, Dolan will burn through 13 head coaches, also start his own rock band, go to war with the New York media, send a legendary player out of the Garden in handcuffs, blacklist ordinary fans who dared to cross him, and oversee, did I mention, the single worst NBA team of the 21st century. And all of that will lead us to the most important question of all here, which is, are Knicks fans just stuck with James Dolan forever? Now, we're just a humble podcast on a mission, a secret plan to pull off the impossible. By the end of this series, we're going to find a way to get James Dolan to sell the Knicks. And wait, I don't think we can say that. Guy, that's not no.
Stick to the script, David.
Okay, then. Okay, fine. Bids start at $6 billion. From Smartless Media and Campside Media, this is Reign of Error, and I'm David Green. Now, if you're an NPR listener, I'm actually kind of surprised that you're even listening to a podcast about sports. I'm sorry, that was really mean. I suck. Anyway, what I really mean to say here is you might recognize my voice as a host of Morning Edition. That's where I worked until 2020. Now, before that, I was Moscow bureau chief, which means I made my wife move to Russia and she was freezing her ass off, which, yeah, makes it pretty astonishing that I'm actually still married. But that's another story. Before that time, I covered the White House, where my nickname was Ocho, which is 8 in Spanish. And I earned that nickname because the White House staff was once looking for the 8th member of the traveling press corps, me, because I was exploring the Mexican president's really exquisite orchard, and I got kind of lost. But anyway, naturally, when the producers of this show were looking around for the perfect host to present a series about James Dolan and the New York Knicks, I mean, they went straight for the obvious candidate, right? A mid-career foreign correspondent from America's top source for sports and comedy, NPR. Okay, I am kidding. I am actually hosting the show because I'm just going to level with you here. The team here at Reign of Error was, I mean, they were getting completely desperate. They offered this gig to a whole bunch of celebrities, and they got a lot of answers like this.
Yeah, I'd love to, but no, I can't do it.
And this.
Oh, no, no, no. My kids love the Knicks, man, and this dude is vindictive. I can't stand the guy, but I also can't risk ruining this for my kids, you know.
Yeah, this is not a bit, I swear. This is a true story. The real live producers of this show, who would also like to remain nameless, tried ex-NBA players, comedians, actors, even some semi-retired ESPN anchors, but they all declined. So in the end, this production landed on me, a journalist. Now, I have reported from war zones. I'm standing on the roof of our hotel in the center of Tripoli, and what we heard is anti-aircraft fire. So I don't fear death or a lifetime ban from Madison Square Garden. I can handle a trust fund kid. He doesn't scare me. I'm also from Pittsburgh. I mean, I live and die by the Steelers, the Pirates, and the Penguins, but I'm safe, right? Because we don't have a basketball team. So Dolan can't really mess with my sports life at all. Oh, shit. That's right. I won't be able to go to Penguins games at the Garden. Well, I guess it's too late for that. The point is that if telling the truth about the most unintentionally hilarious man ever to own a sports team costs me the chance to see my hockey team or BTS at Madison Square Garden, well, you know what? It's a risk I'm willing to take. So let's do this. When the Knicks are good, New York City really comes to life. The city just buzzes. The mood is better, the holidays are better, everything's better. And that's how it was in the 90s. The 90s Knicks were a terrifying powerhouse of a team defined by some legends like Patrick Ewing, John Starks, Charles Oakley.
Stretch for three. Look out, New York. John Starks, a one-man wrecking crew. Ewing on a give and go. 35 seconds away from the Knicks dethroning the Chicago Bulls. And they are roaring their approval here in Manhattan, up out of their seats. At the Garden, another sellout tonight.
Yeah, so that changed when James Dolan took over. The energy and excitement mostly left the building. And so did the success. Within a few years, fans were pissed off. And Dolan was singing the blues. Or the bluegrass, maybe? Neo-country? I don't know. You decide.
Oh, I own a basketball team. For most people, that would be a dream. For a trust fund kid, it's a living hell. Always some asshole telling me to sell.
That is actually James Dolan singing there. But he's joking. I mean, we think. And although it's not exactly high art, it does get at some important questions. Questions like, if your father hands you an enormous fortune and you get to own a basketball team and be the lead singer of your own rock band, why can't you be happy? I mean, I'm not a licensed therapist, but I'm guessing it goes back to childhood. So that's where we're going to start this first episode of our series, with an epic story of a rivalry between father and son, like Oedipus, except without the sex. And no one goes blind that we know of. So this is episode one of our five-part series, Daddy Issues. It is 2005, and Jim Dolan, who's about 50, is in a fight with his dad. But this is not a normal low-stakes father-son disagreement, because the Dolans run a massive company called Cablevision, and their attacks on each other are spilling into public view.
He had a PR team that would continually battle this and continually talk about how they were together on Thanksgiving or they got together on the 4th of July. But when you heard things like that, you almost thought, well, they doth protest too much.
We're hearing from Peter Grant here. He's a reporter who covered the Dolans and their business for the Wall Street Journal. Chuck Dolan, Jim's father, is the founder of Cablevision, which at the time was a behemoth in the telecommunications field. And Jim is Chuck's hand-picked successor. So Jim is CEO of the company, but his dad is still a powerful force in the building.
They would like play jokes on each other. At one point, Charles, over a weekend, took a door in Jim's office and just put a wall on it. So you go back into your office and you're saying, wait, where's that door? It's the kind of thing that if you ever see the TV show The Office, something that Jim would do to Dwight. I mean, it was those types of antics.
Jim may be the CEO, but Chuck built this company and he is not going to let Jim forget that.
Jim was a boss's son who definitely got to where he was because his father carried him. He probably had his own skills and weaknesses, but I don't think he would have been in the position or having the power that he had if he hadn't been Charles's son.
One thing they fought over a ton was satellites. I mean, I'm sure you and your dad can relate to that, right? Chuck Dolan thinks they are the future of television, and he wants Cablevision to make a big bet on satellite TV. Jim feels otherwise. But of course, this is more than just a business disagreement. It's family.
What absolutely became a Shakespearean drama, because up until that point, although you heard about tension between Charles and James, it never bubbled out to the surface like it did in this case. And now it was apparent they were taking shots at each other.
The conflict comes to a head with an emergency meeting of Cablevision's board of directors. And this is a big deal. Reporters get word of the meeting and they start calling it D-Day for Dolans. Basically, the board will take a vote on whether to side with Chuck or Jim. It's father against son in a grudge match, and only one will emerge the victor. The other's going to be publicly embarrassed. So how did it come to this? Well, like any good New York sports story, our tale begins at an underground rifle range on the Lower East Side. In the mid-80s, Chuck Dolan, dad, invited his business partners to a private dinner at an Italian heritage club in Lower Manhattan. Neil Pilson, this young TV executive, strolled into this exclusive club and he found himself a bit awestruck. The walls were lined with pictures of famous Italian-Americans, men like Joe DiMaggio and Frank Sinatra. The dining hall led out to these polished wood floors and also an indoor bocce court where I am picturing generations of made men carving up the city's garbage hauling business. This is Pilson.
And we had a catered dinner, beautiful dinner. And they invited us if we wanted to go downstairs after dinner. They had guns that we could shoot at their range.
Despite being the head of a television empire that stretched around the country, Chuck had a playful air about him. People describe him as being elfish. It's not a word you hear a lot, but meaning I think that Chuck was a small, kindly man with a twinkle in his eye, maybe a little trick up his sleeve. That night, Chuck was celebrating a partnership with Pilson's company, CBS. It was supposed to be a party, but still everyone knew whose party this was.
They all were kind of stealing a glance at Chuck during the meetings. They always wanted to be sure Chuck's demeanor was placid. Let's put it that way. So when they looked at Chuck, I would look at Chuck. And Chuck rarely changed expression. But you always knew who the senior person was.
Young Neil Pilson admired Chuck. He was like a kindly old mentor and a TV business visionary. In the 60s and 70s, Chuck had laid cable lines all across greater New York. And then he created this newfangled premium cable channel with exclusive movies, TV, and live sports. Maybe you've heard of it. Home Box Office, HBO. And actually, it sounded like this back then.
What is it? It's not TV. It's HBO. And it's time to be a part of it.
So that night at the club, Chuck spoke softly and seemed to enjoy playing the benevolent down-home host.
I recall Chuck giving each of us, to celebrate, we each got a bag of chocolate chip cookies, which he ate on the way home, as a matter of fact.
Cookies and guns turned out to be a winning combination. The senior Dolan managed to come off as a businessman who is good at charming people as well as letting them know exactly who is in charge. Jim Dolan would inherit one of those qualities. The conflict between Chuck and Jim was obvious from the beginning. Jim was in the middle of six kids, and the boys were all expected to go into business. But as his dad was building a TV empire, young Jim started playing guitar. He and his friends formed a jam band on the North Shore of Long Island, where they all lived and would sneak over to each other's houses when their parents weren't home. His mother, a piano player, actually encouraged Jim to focus on music, but quietly, on the sly. You know, she'd say, "Your father says you shouldn't do this," but then she'd let Jim do his thing. And while this story seems unbelievable, I mean, it makes Chuck sound like the evil villain in a fairy tale, it was actually Jim himself who told this version of it to the New York Daily News, explaining via sad understatement that, quote, "When I told him I wanted to be a musician, he wasn't very supportive." And there must be some truth in there, because Chuck apparently loved to tease Jim by saying he couldn't tell the difference between Elton John and Frank Sinatra, which is kind of weird because only one of them wore sequins. But anyway, one TV rival described Chuck as Darth Vader in a Howdy Doody costume. And true to form, sounds like Dolan did in fact want to harness his son's abilities and bring him to the dark side, to corporate business. The legend goes that teenage Jim resisted. Throughout the 70s, Jim did all the things a rock and roll obsessed teenager was supposed to do. Instead of studying up to join the family business, he snuck out to see the Grateful Dead, Led Zeppelin, Mick Jagger play at Madison Square Garden. He started experimenting with drugs and alcohol, and maybe worse, at least from Chuck's point of view, he decided to go to college at an artsy public school upstate, SUNY New Paltz, and told his parents that he would not be going into the family business. Jim would write about his dilemma later in life in a song by the band he would go on to found and is still in today, J.D. and the Straight Shot.
"My place in this world just doesn't make sense. A victim of good fortune, ambition, and pride."
The irony of singing about being a victim of good fortune, backed by a band of crack musicians financed by that good fortune, is truly beautiful, right? If Jim is aware of that, I wasn't picking that up in this performance. But there is also a universal truth here. Disappointing your dad just hurts. And maybe it was that disappointment that led Jim to reconsider his path in life. Or maybe the real lure was money and power. We're never going to know. Jim claims that he had this epiphany in college when he realized his guitar tutor was only being paid $5 an hour. If this instructor was so talented and still so broke, maybe Jim's dad was right after all. Now, we've contacted every longtime guitar teacher in the college town of New Paltz, and none of them had any idea who Jim is talking about. One thing seems certain, though. Nobody was teaching guitar for $5 an hour. Point is, at age 22, Jimmy went crawling back to dad, ready to join the family business, despite his youthful indiscretions. Actually, the severity of Jim's alcohol and drug habit at this point in his career isn't clear. But by his own admission, Jim's addictions became a serious problem as his time at the company went on. He was just doing his best to hide it. Chuck, for his part, was happy to have his wayward son back in the fold. I mean, if Jim was ready to build a career, Chuck was ready to help him, because what he wanted was a worthy heir to his kingdom. And Jim was starting to look like the best candidate. Even early on, Jim proved himself to be aggressive, confident, unafraid of making enemies, arguably good traits in a cutthroat business. So Chuck immediately started grooming him to be an executive, which meant learning the business from the ground up. Dolan started out in the trenches, installing cable boxes, selling subscriptions. He even did a short stint running a local sports talk radio station in Cleveland. And we called the general manager there, who seemed surprised to hear from us, then said that young Jim was, this is a direct quote,
the smartest person I've ever met.
And then he had nothing else to add. Although none of these gigs were all that glamorous, certainly not as glamorous as being a rock star, it seems that Jim embraced the role of family heir. Jim had a family of his own at this point, and even moved them out to a Long Island compound that was just a 5-minute drive from his dad.
Look, if you're a son, you want to emulate your father. You learn from your father, and you want to do things the way you believe your father would do it. And I think that's part of the mentality that James Dolan would have as the son of Chuck Dolan.
That is Bob Gutkowski, a former TV executive with a bad Zoom connection. But what he's got to say is important. Unlike young Neil Pilson, Gutkowski was a rival of the Dolans, especially Chuck.
Nice as he could be, when it came to business, he'd eat your heart out. And they didn't like competition. So their only way of dealing it was from a forceful bully mentality, and it was take it or leave it, because you have no other place to go.
The action is here as Madison Square Garden Cablevision presents the very best in sports and entertainment programming.
Chuck may not have shared his son's appreciation of music, but they both loved sports. And the Dolans made sports broadcasts a big part of the Cablevision package. For a while, the Dolans owned the rights to broadcast the biggest team in baseball, the New York Yankees. Now, this is a little complicated, but Gutkowski ran MSG Cable Network before the Dolans owned Madison Square Garden. And both Cablevision and MSG Network were competing with each other to broadcast more live sports. When Gutkowski managed to poach the Yankees broadcast rights away from Cablevision, well, of course, Chuck and Jim were furious and they wanted revenge. Now, the Dolans had a separate deal with Gutkowski's company, which gave them the rights to broadcast Knicks and Rangers home games at MSG. Obviously, this was before the Dolans owned the arena and both of those teams.
I know the way this guy deals in business. I know he's all about leverage and strength, and he is going to throw us off.
So basically, as a way to get back at Gutkowski, the Dolans just stopped broadcasting Knicks and Rangers games out of pure spite. This was right in the middle of the season for both teams. And as you can imagine, this really pissed off fans. People got so angry, in fact, that they started calling Chuck's house in the middle of the night to yell at him. When that didn't work, they picketed the company's headquarters in Manhattan. The whole thing blew up into such an ordeal that eventually Cablevision executives had to testify in front of the New York legislature. Chuck and Jim lost badly, and not just the business battle. They lost the public, too. From that time on, a huge chunk of Knicks fans despised this family. Remember, this is well before they even owned the team. And if I had to guess, the feeling was mutual. Jim did not exactly take well to this criticism, and his apparent distaste for New York Knicks fans probably started developing during this first standoff, which, if you're keeping score here, Gutkowski won. But years later, he tried to buy Knicks tickets for a family friend with a disability.
And he said, "We don't have any tickets for you." I said, "Well, all right, great. You guys are doing well, you know, and there's nothing to buy." He says, "No, that's not the reason." He says, "You're on Jim's enemy list, and we're not allowed to sell you tickets." So I said, "You're telling me the ex-president of Madison Square Garden can't buy 2 tickets for a handicapped kid?" And he said, "Yeah."
Ah, damn, that's some evil shit. So somehow being hated by New York sports fans must have motivated Chuck to double down. He decided that he needed to own a New York sports franchise. He tried to buy the Yankees not long afterwards, and when that didn't work out, he tried to buy the Mets, which also failed. What the Dolans did buy is the rights to broadcast the Summer Olympics. Chuck forged this partnership with NBC, and he sent Jim to broadcast every available event live at the 1992 Games. Cablevision customers could purchase 24-hour coverage of the competitions, from the most iconic ones to the most obscure. Here's a viewer of Jim Dolan's Olympics interviewed on NBC.
You know, the first day when it came on, I thought, well, Dream Team, 4:30 in the morning, you know, I'm going to get up. So I set it, alarms and everything, and got all up to watch the Dream Team. Turned out it was Lithuania and Spain or something.
Since most people were not that interested in paying money to watch Lithuanian basketball or Armenian dressage, Jim's program did not do well. It lost $50 million. So whether it was this series of aggravations at work or maybe lingering personal demons, Jim's addiction reached a tipping point. According to Cablevision's former head of security, Chuck Dolan ordered staff to search Jim's office and home for drugs. And when they found certain unnamed substances, Chuck sent his son to rehab. Now, Chuck denies this version of the story. But however the trip to rehab went down, it was not a sign that Chuck was giving up on Jim. He cared about his son. He even flew back and forth to the clinic to check on his progress. All the while, he made sure to keep a position at the company available. Because when Jim got out, Chuck had big plans in mind for his heir apparent. That story after the break.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you be enjoying great tasting dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals that call it home. This is dairy you can feel good about. It's great tasting, high quality organic dairy, ethically sourced from small organic family farms. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop. That's ov.coop.
While Jim Dolan is rising through the family business in the 90s, the pre-Dolan era Knicks are absolutely ascendant. And Madison Square Garden was the hottest ticket in New York.
We're down to 50 seconds left in the fourth quarter. He's got it under. Got it! With 8 minutes left.
The place was electric.
That's Don Cronson, agent for former Knick Anthony Mason, one of the toughest power forwards ever to play in the NBA. Cronson would sit just rows from the floor, right in front of Sarah Jessica Parker. He eventually helped another actor sell his seats for this ungodly sum.
They wound up selling for $212,000 that year. These two tickets on Celebrity Row. That's how hot the ticket was. That's how hot the garden was. People were nuts to get these tickets.
The Knicks, they weren't just winning. Their games were fun. The team was big and physical and passionate. And the Knicks would fight anybody. Even themselves. One time, Mason got in what seemed like a fairly minor dispute with management. Mason was suspended after complaining to the media about his playing time.
I get on the phone with Mason, and he is apoplectic, is a very understated use of the term in this case. He was literally screeching, "Fuck the Knicks! Fuck Riley! Fuck!" He's off. I mean, wild. And I'm trying to calm him down.
The coach of the Knicks at that time, Pat Riley, pretty intense guy. Kind of guy who probably came right back at Mason.
I said, "Anthony, here's what you do. You lay low. Don't talk to anybody publicly. Just and stay away from the garden. Just lay low, and we're going to get this thing to blow over." Well, the next night, the Knicks play in the garden. Who goes to the garden? He's walking around the third deck and people are yelling his name and Riley is sitting on the bench and I was told you could see the vein in his neck. I mean, talk about bringing a can of gasoline to a fire.
That was the 90s Knicks. Entertaining, chaotic, ready for a fight. Average New Yorkers, they wanted to see the show and celebrities wanted to be seen at Madison Square Garden. Now, as for the Dolans, After those failed bids to buy the Yankees and the Mets, they still really wanted a piece of the New York sports action. Jim Dolan checked out of rehab after a month, and he had sworn off drugs and alcohol, and his dad was there waiting for him on the outside. Once Jim was free, father and son continued to live next door to each other, and they met to talk business every day. Chuck continued to make it clear to the rest of his children that despite Jim's struggles, he was the chosen one, destined to take over as Cablevision CEO. Chuck even insisted that he and Jim be photographed together during media appearances as if to show the world, this is my heir. Still, no matter how much power Jim acquired at Cablevision, Chuck made sure that he, as the patriarch, continued to have the final say. And it was around this time that Chuck struck the deal that would change the course of his son's life and also guarantee generations of Knickerbocker hell.
Cablevision has agreed to pay ITT Corporation $650 million for the 50% of the garden it does not already own.
Now, it would be nice to say that Chuck Dolan swooped in and bought the Knicks in dramatic fashion, like a guard picking off a pass and running away for a breakaway dunk. Truth is that Chuck bought the Knicks in the most boring corporate way you could imagine. It started with Cablevision owning this little bit of Madison Square Garden, then a little more, until finally the Dolans owned all of it. So the acquisition of the Knicks is actually not all that interesting. But what is interesting is what happens afterwards. Because Chuck might have masterminded the deal, but he didn't intend to run the Knicks.
Chuck rarely came to the Garden. Rarely came to the Garden.
This is Seth Abraham, a former HBO executive who worked with Chuck in the TV business.
He was never active in the Garden, ever. And a little just armchair psychology, I think that Chuck wanted Jim, his son, to make his own way. And I think that for Chuck, the Garden was Jim's domain.
Once Chuck handed the hottest ticket in town over to his son, Jim hired his dad's old colleague to help run the place. So Seth Abraham worked with both Dolans. And Jim's style, he says, is vastly different from Chuck's. Here is how he describes the father.
Old school gentleman, a very hard-nosed businessman. You know, fist in a velvet glove. Might have done better in the 18th century. Wonderful manners.
As for the son?
Jim was and is a zealot. And if you look in a dictionary at the definition of what a zealot is, it's a person who really is fanatical and uncompromising about, could be religious beliefs, political beliefs, or their own ideals. And for Jim, Radio City Music Hall, the Garden, the Beacon Theater, these are not toys. These are serious business enterprises. But he is a zealot. He is a zealot. And often, not always, but often zealotry gets in the way of making a sound business decision.
So Dolan came into power, and he was like typical Dolan, like some of the stuff that you would expect.
That is Chris Herring, who wrote Blood in the Garden, a book about the 90s Knicks.
If you can remember that fight that the Knicks got into in 97 with the Heat.
This was an all-timer of a brawl.
P.J. Brown picked Charlie Ward up and threw him into the photographer's row.
Because of what end of the floor it happened on, the Knicks players came kind of running off the bench to kind of have their teammates back. So when that happened, they were kind of the first team that was made an example of, where like, you're not going to leave the bench or else we're going to suspend you.
And a technical foul has been called on the Knicks, John Starks. He has been ejected.
They had so many guys suspended that they could only suspend them in parts. Like, they did like the first part of the alphabet. You guys are going to be suspended for one game, and then the other two guys are going to be suspended for another.
After the suspensions, the Knicks lost a close playoff series. And Jim was still so new to the job that he had barely spoken to the team's head coach, Jeff Van Gundy. But apparently Jim did not like what he saw, or maybe saw an opportunity here to assert himself, to put his stamp on the franchise. That offseason, Jim flew down to training camp and had lunch with Van Gundy.
It was just like a getting to know you lunch because he'd really never spoken to these guys. At one point, though, like the good feelings of that meeting, that lunch, just soured really quickly because Dolan, out of nowhere, said, you know, I just wanted to say, like, if anything ever happens, like what happened in last season's playoffs, Jeff, I'm going to hold you directly accountable for it. And Jeff was like in the middle of biting something. He was like, oh, okay, that's good to know.
Knicks executives were furious that the new owner had gone behind their backs to be needlessly aggressive to the team's popular and successful head coach. But that's not how Jim saw it. The next season, another fight broke out, and things went differently.
See? They didn't run off the bench this time. Like, I must have taught them really well.
Jim was beginning to throw his weight around at the Garden, and he seemed to want the same kind of authority at Cablevision. But Chuck didn't seem close to ready to give up control. In fact, he seemed to take every opportunity to make it publicly known that his son was just a kid who's along for the ride. Chuck even told a reporter,
I let him run up and down the room until he gets tired.
Jim snapped back,
it's just like it was when I was 5 years old.
And while this power struggle raged on at Cablevision, the Knicks were having kind of a rough season at the Garden.
Patrick Ewing, though, a season of frustration on the brink here of elimination, can't get one to fall.
1999 was a lockout-shortened year in which the Knicks got injured more often and lost far more games than usual. And things began to get ugly. The result was a public fight between two of the top figures in the organization.
Jeff Van Gundy and Ernie Grunfeld, the team's general manager at the time, had very strong disagreements about the rotation and how things were operating and appeared to be speaking anonymously, you know, basically going anonymous in these stories where a faction of the media was covering it kind of from Van Gundy's perspective. And then another faction of the media was speaking from Grunfeld's perspective. And in some cases, even the PR people were kind of standing behind the person in the organization. Based on all that, Dolan could read between the lines and was basically saying, I don't like the fact that these guys are at odds with each other publicly. It looks bad because, again, he has an obsession with the media and what shows up in the newspaper.
Knicks management encouraged Dolan to be patient, which worked for a few weeks. But then Jim got fed up and he ordered the team president to take general manager Grunfeld out to dinner, which, unbeknownst to Grunfeld, turned out to be his farewell dinner.
They spoke for like 2.5 hours. And then in the last half hour of the dinner, he told Ernie Grunfeld he'd have to fire him.
This was with 8 games left in a shortened 50-game season. Seemed irrational, but suddenly things did start to turn around. The Knicks started winning. So was Dolan some kind of basketball savant? Probably not. There were concrete, real-world reasons for this turnaround, too. Mainly, a number of key players who had been out with injuries happened to get healthy just in time for the stretch run. Also, this was a proud roster, and Knicks players were determined to finish strong and make the playoffs, which they did. The Knicks squeaked into the playoffs as the 8th seed, the last qualifying spot. And then in the first round, they drew the top team in the East, just so happened to be the Miami Heat, arch rivals, also the team from that huge brawl in Jim's earliest days. 8th seed against top seed. Knicks didn't have a prayer, right?
Porter got it away. Second team in NBA history to knock off a number one. An 8 over a number one, only the second time in NBA history.
And after stunning the Heat, the Knicks continued this playoff run all the way to the NBA Finals, where they lost to Tim Duncan's San Antonio Spurs. But still, this was a hell of a run. And for Jim, this seemed like more than a coincidence.
They're still the only 8 seed to ever make the finals. But I think because of some of that, because the team had so much success right after Dolan demanded the firing, he took it to mean that Dolan kind of felt emboldened to keep meddling and keep stepping in and keep implementing what he wanted to do because it worked the first time. In his mind,
this meddling, it would become a defining tenet of Dolan's ownership.
It worked the first time, even though it might have just kind of been, this is what happens when you have the team with the highest payroll and all this talent, when they just get healthy and when they bear down and they decide they really want to make the playoffs. whyever it happened, Dolan kind of took that as a victory and then continued to get more and more involved in the years to come.
Jim's only professional business experience is at Dad's cable company. But nevertheless, he seemed convinced that he's a basketball genius. And come to think of it, he probably deserves more power at his dad's company, too. The following year, the Dolans hosted their annual July 4th mega party at the family estate on the North Shore of Long Island. Jim emcees the celebration and welcomes 2,000 esteemed guests onto the Dolan compound. There's the governor and some senators that the Dolans have helped elect. There's Billy Joel and his girlfriend who works for the Dolans. And there's Knicks coach Jeff Van Gundy who works for Jim. Jim introduces a performance by the Rockettes who work for Cablevision and also a short performance by Whitney Houston who was not there as a volunteer. It was a special night for the family. And Jim may have been the MC, but he wasn't at all the center of attention. That's because this particular 4th of July party was doubling as a celebration for his parents' 50th wedding anniversary. As a parting gift, attendees are sent home with signed photos of the family estate. Jim's other siblings, 3 sisters, 2 brothers, are there as well, of course. One is an equestrian, one's a teacher, another a newscaster, and yet another has emerged as an unlikely rival in the family business. Lately, Chuck has started to put his weight behind Jim's older brother, Thomas. Maybe Chuck felt that Jim could benefit from a little bit of competition. Maybe he just felt like Tom needed something to do. The brothers, though, are now pitted against each other. Jim may have control over the Knicks for the moment, but his career is only secure as long as he stays in his dad's favor. And just like his dad, Jim does not like competition. We'll be right back.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores, like Urban Outfitters, Fenty Beauty, and Expedia. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
All right, so we're selling 360A.
So it's the spring of 2001, and Jim Dolan is sitting at a charity auction along the Hudson River, you know, throwing his money around. When he's not wheeling and dealing cable subscriptions or point guard contracts, he still finds time for music. And today, Bruce Springsteen's guitar is up for sale. The auctioneer jokes about taking bids to be president of Madison Square Garden. But then he gets down to business. The bidding starts at $25,000, which, of course, Jim matches. Someone raises to $26,000, which Jim also matches. Same person raises again. Jim meets it again, but wonders who the hell is competing against Jimmy for this incredible piece of music memorabilia. He turns around in his seat, and he sees none other than Dad, the man who refused to buy his teenage son a guitar. For laughs, he's willing to pay tens of thousands of dollars to keep this instrument out of his son's hands. Jim raises to $30,000, and then he decides, enough. He raises his bid to $35,000, and he wins. But, you know, it's around this time that the Dolan family infighting is becoming noticeably public. At this point, Jim has been named CEO of Cablevision, but his dad's presence is still everywhere, and Jim supposedly hates this. There's this story of Jim walking into a Cablevision meeting where one of Chuck's lieutenants began to explain some small business issue. Jim slammed down his office binder and yelled something like this.
This is my meeting. I don't need anyone to explain things in my meetings.
And then he stormed out, and the meeting kept going without him. Jim seems to sing about the pressure of family ties in his single, Violet Song.
Born and raised to stand my ground, to this house I am bound forever, forever. I will not break, I will not bend, always ready to defend forever.
Market analysts, well, they're starting to question Chuck Dolan's succession plan here and also the stability of Cablevision. Behind the scenes, this is when Chuck is beginning to support Jim's brother, Thomas, who ran a rival division within the company that focused on satellite television.
So what happened was, in this dynamic, Charles Dolan became infatuated with satellite, and he decided that satellite was the direction that the industry was headed.
This is Peter Grant again, the Wall Street Journal reporter we heard from at the top of the show. Chuck and Tom begin working together on a satellite division inside Cablevision, and things get so bad that Jim and Tom, brothers, they stop speaking to each other. In a speech at a cable industry event, Chuck actually nods to this family drama.
We have both stepped aside and permitted our well-trained, devoted, humble sons to follow in our footsteps. They're obedient. It's so great to have one of your own take over. They have docile, submissive people who wouldn't dream of making a move without checking you first.
The message is pretty clear. Stay in your lane, kiddo. In 2003, Chuck and Jim flew to Cape Canaveral in Florida to launch Cablevision's first satellites. But this satellite business didn't have a natural customer base, or maybe it was just ahead of its time. Either way, it was a total flop. The new venture lost more than $600 million in a single year. And maybe it was this massive loss that made Jim see that for the first time in his life, he just might have the upper hand on his dad. Jim started making his case to the Cablevision board of directors, encouraging them to shut down the satellite division. And he starts to win over the board.
The fact that he had so much support on the board encouraged him to do this and encouraged him to challenge his father, really, for the first time in his life, publicly.
When Jim tells the board to shut those satellites down, Chuck goes into full attack mode. He replaces a quarter of Cablevision's board. He petitions the FCC to block Cablevision from selling its satellites. And he buys his own website for the satellite division. He even gives cryptic messages about his son's job being secure, which makes reporters suspect the exact opposite.
It started as a business decision, but it was the business part was the tip of the iceberg. The emotional part was the part that ran deep under the surface. But the two were tied together. These two men were very much emotionally tied to each other.
Finally, father and son face off in that infamous board meeting. This is the one reporters have labeled D-Day for Dolans. For 2 hours, they're debating with Cablevision staff. It's Jim on one side, it's Dad and Tom on the other, and only one is going to win this fight. The meeting is incredibly secretive. But the result, the vote, is clear. Jim wins. And if Chuck and his other son want their damn satellites, they're going to have to buy them themselves.
In this last battle, James stood up to his father and prevailed. I've got to guess that that permanently changed the relationship. And permanently, this is a big disappointment for Charles. I mean, he really went to the mat. And the fact that his son sort of beat him, I think, changed him and changed the relationship.
Yeah, this was a huge moment for Jim. His grip on power was clear, tighter than ever. Not only did he emerge as the rightful heir of the family empire, he now had the backing of the board. So He's even more emboldened to assert himself from his other throne over the Knicks and Madison Square Garden. One day early in Jim's reign, he sent many of his top MSG executives to a company retreat in Florida. You know, some time on the beach might be a good way to get loose, not to mention get ready for the new boss.
We're playing these crazy games in the sand, trying to build us and bring us together. And Jim Dolan shows up.
This is John Fay, a former MSG vice president of security. He spoke to us on his phone, apparently not in the best coverage area. But anyway, John remembers this surprise visit from the boss really well.
Nobody knew he was coming. And he told me to tell you guys tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, he wants everybody down this auditorium downstairs. Every single person here in the garden has to meet me at 9 o'clock that night.
An article in Sports Illustrated describes this makeshift stage that's set up in one of the resort's ballrooms. And then the curtains at the front begin to open. And the room here, I mean, it's full of dozens of senior managers from Madison Square Garden. They all fall silent. And there he is, Jim Dolan, standing proudly under the lights. Behind him are a handful of Garden employees. They're in Hawaiian shirts and they're set up as a band. Yeah, they start singing.
One, two, three.
A passable version of Bruce Springsteen's Born to Run, but with new lyrics. Now, this is not really Jim, by the way. There's no recording that we know of. But these are the real lyrics, as well as our best guess at how we imagine this all went down.
This company rips the bones from your back. It's a death trap. It's a suicide rap. You should have got out while you were young. Cause I have something to tell you. I'm Chuck Dolan's son.
I didn't know what the hell he was doing, to be honest. But I sat up in the front because it was just my job to sit in the front. I did.
And then the president of MSG turns to Fay and tells him, can you send someone from HR to rush the stage or something? I mean, maybe that will distract Jim enough to end all of this madness?
All right. I really didn't want to do this. It was, like, stupid. But I did it anyway. And everybody laughed, and Jimmy just kept singing. He just kept singing.
Oh, someday, Davey, I don't know when we're gonna get to that place where we really want to go, and then we'll have some fun. As long as you remember, I'm Chuck Dolan's son.
Some people thought it was funny. Some people thought it was crazy. Some people said he's basically telling you why you're all leaving because he's taking over and wants his own people here. And eventually that's how it happened.
The party's over. There's a new boss in town and a legendary run of losing is about to begin. That's next time on Reign of Error. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Reign of Error early and ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen early and ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. Reign of Error is a co-production of Smartless Media and Campside Media. I'm David Green. And now I bring you a list of people who will definitely never be able to enter Madison Square Garden ever again. A group of people who also had a significant role in the making of this show. The series was reported and written by Joe Hawthorne with Michael Canyon-Meyer. Joe Hawthorne is the producer. Story editing by Michael Canyon-Meyer, Mark McAdam, and Josh Dean. Our associate producer is Abu Kamara. Sound design and engineering by Alex Portfelix with Garrett Tiedemann. Studio engineering by Ewan Leitrimuen. Josh Dean and Mark McAdam are our executive producers. Fact checking by Layla Dose. Additional reporting by Matt Giles and Julian Kimball. Archival research by Caitlin Rathey. The character of James Dolan is voiced by a guy who's afraid he'll never work in this town again if we say his name. Additional help from Natalia Winkleman, Doug Slaywin, and Harry Krinsky. The executive producers at Smartless Media are Richard Corson and Bernie Kaminsky. The executive producers at Campside Media are Josh Dean, Vanessa Gregoriadis, Adam Hoff, and Matt Scher.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.